Our next speaker, I'm very happy to have him because he called in only last week and asked, could you speak at the GoDev room, please? Because we had a cancelled talk. Apparently, immigration out to the UK is a problem post-Brexit. And he said yes. And why did I call him? Because last year, he also had to say no to me. And he promised me to give a talk. And he's going to give the same talk he promised to me last year, which is basically, I quit a well-paid job at Google, and here's why. Round of applause to Filippo.
Thank you. The good news is that this is a much better talk than I would have given a year ago. Because a year ago, I had no idea if this was going to work. I have good news. Anyway, first, a bit about me. I'm Filippo Valsorda. I've been the maintainer of the Go Cryptography standard library about since 2018. And that's a job I've shared over the years with Katie Hockman, Roland Shoemaker, Damien Neal, Nicola Morino, and many others, to be clear. I was doing that at Google until 2022. So I was on the Go team. The title I had was lead of the Go security team. And that's the team that did things, including the fuzzing support that we were talking about earlier. Until 2022. Because in 2022, I left pretty much to prove a point about proving that something was possible. And the something was actually, let me tell you a story first. Stop me if you heard it. You're maintaining an open source project, and that open source project has two kinds of maintainers. Some are volunteers, so you don't really feel like you can ask any hard commitment of them, right? You can tell them, well, I mean, Alice, you really told me that you were going to fix CI. Why isn't it fixed? Well, Alice will respond, because you don't pay me. And what do you say to that? Sorry. Nothing. Yes, exactly. Thank you for your help. And the alternative is you are employed full-time at a company. And that company is a reality of capitalist society, which I say with no value judgment there. And that company has an interest in making money and has an interest in not spending money that will not make money because that's what a company is and does. And that company will maybe start a project because it has a bunch of value for recruitment and for internal infrastructure. And it will fund some maintainers because it goes like, yeah, this is a good project. We should make it into existence. And that's great. That's the company contributing something to the world, and we should appreciate that. Then the project grows. Now, does the value of that project to that company grow? Not really. So the number of users double, and then double, and then double, and then double. And they start filling rooms and conferences, and that's great. And do you think the number of people working on that project, fully paid by a company, grow? They do not. And some people get angry at the company, and they think that's misplaced, because why should a company say, oh, yes, this is more useful to the world, so we should sink a lot more money into it? I mean, hey, if it was my money, sure. But you're a manager at a company, it's not your money, it's the shareholders' money, it's not really even a thing you can do. So now you have a problem, because success of the project puts the project in a difficult position. And I said, stop me if you know this one, because this is not a rant about Go. This is not about Google. This is not about any specific case. If I had seen this only once, I wouldn't have said, well, this kind of needs a fix. This is something I've heard over and over and over again, all over the industry, all over the past 10 years, all over different companies. Because this is fundamentally an issue in alignment of incentives. So the problem is that critical open source projects, that we don't have a sustainable way to maintain them. And I'm not talking about contributing back. I'm not talking about integrating a new feature or anything like that. I'm talking about the grunt work of going through the issue tracker every morning and say no, 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 no. Which I guess is tinged by what I do, which is cryptography, which most of the times I want to tell you no about. And if I said no to anybody in this room on the issue tracker, I'm sorry. You can find me later. But the point is that that work is really hard to fund, both in the voluntarism Okay. In the voluntarism model and in the full-time employment model. So what did I do? Well, I had this hypothesis that there was a way to fund open source maintenance like a profession. And the model goes a bit like this, going to companies and offering them retainers, making the core focus maintenance. So not going to companies and say, you'll get 100 hours of support this year. That doesn't scale. I'm not talking about, hey, do you really want that feature? I'll implement it for XK. That's actually kind of, I'm super uncomfortable with that because that means that to make money, you need to add features. If you add features, you increase maintenance burden. If you increase maintenance burden, you need more money. So what do? You add more features. And yeah, that's a bad spiral. You don't want to be in that spiral. Then there's also applying for grants, which is a totally valid way to go about it, but then you become an expert in applying for grants. And hey, I made a lot of questionable life choices. I just didn't make that one questionable life choice. So this is the part where people tell me, yeah, but Filippo, companies really don't want to pay for this. So really no way to go about it. That was the part that I was convinced was not true. I was convinced that companies can get something out of this because some companies even have an internal Go team whose only job is being experts in Go. Now, that costs so much money. A fully loaded software engineer is like a giant expense. So my theory was that I could go to these companies and say, hey, do you want a resident Go expert that you can ask advice to and who can liaison your issues with the team and can help you guide through the contribution process and so on? And to be clear, this is not offering governance, this is not offering support hours, this is just, would you like expertise that you don't currently have access to it? And, you know, a lot of people told me, no, that's not going to work. I was kind of convinced it would work, so I quit. And tried. And here I want to make a small parenthesis. This is an incredibly privileged thing to do. I was able to do this because I had the money from having worked at Google, because I live in a country with a sane healthcare system, and yes, and because of my personal position, and because I knew that I could actually call up a number of people and say, hey, would you give me a half an hour of your time? I want to pitch you something. And we'll get to that. Anyway, this is almost exactly a year ago, which I did not realize until I made the slides. I'm pretty happy about that. So exactly a year ago, I announced that this is what I was going to do. At this time, I had one client. So, you know, think it until you make it. If you want to read more about the model, and this was the 10 minutes version, but if you want to know more, that's an article you can find, you know, search engines sort of still work, so I'm sure you can find it. Now, a year has passed, so this is an update talk. Lots of people ask me, okay, so how is it going? And to be fair, I haven't published much because there's a lot of work involved in doing this thing. Now, first the good news, it's working. I have a healthy portfolio of clients. So far, only one client has churned, and not because they were unhappy about the service, but for their side reasons. And I am fairly happy with this, and this is funding me at the same level as Google was funding me, which I'm not saying as a humble brag. I'm saying it because I think it's important that we offer an alternative for maintainers that is competitive with the jobs they could get on the market. Because another thing that doesn't work is saying, well, you're an open source maintainer, right? So you consume, what, 3 boxes of ramen a day. I guess you should go to the cinema a couple times a month. So you're going to be fine with like 10K a year, right? 15 maybe, and you can keep maintaining this. Great. Yeah, sounds good. And then, you know, something happens in their life and they go like, well, maybe I would like to make more money than that. And let's see how much money they offer me down the street to a person who can manage a large technical project with a number of stakeholders and who can coordinate contributors and who then qualifies as a senior software engineer. The answer is a lot more money. And so they stop maintaining the open source project. And so again, we don't have a sustainable model. So I think it's important to stress that what I'm going for is something that's competitive with senior software engineer salaries. And that's a part that everybody usually would just kick me out of the room when I would get to, because they would say, there's no way to make that much. So it turns out, yeah. Now, lessons learned. What got me here? So a lot of it is sales. This is the bad news part of the talk. None of us wants to be doing sales. We want to be doing software maintenance. But what I usually tell maintainers on this is, so do you know dentists? Do you have a dentist friend, a dentist relative? Do you think they ever stopped for a moment and went like, you know, I really like teeth, but the whole invoicing people, running a clinic, hiring somebody, paying taxes, marketing my services, nah, that's not my core skill. You know what? I'll just do it for free. Know anybody? Great. And anybody who went like, yeah, so you know, really, I'm probably not cut for being a dentist. I guess I'll just change careers. Probably somebody, but most of the dentists we do go to just do the parts of the job that are not core skills. And we'll also get to the advantages dentists have over professional maintainers, but we'll get to that in a second. But a core point here is that there's a lot of sales. So it's enterprise sales. There are books about it. We usually like learning stuff, right, when it's technical. Turns out this stuff is also extremely learnable. And what worked for me is finding champions inside companies and going to them and saying, hey, so this is a thing I'm doing. And those champions are usually engineering, and they'll tell me, oh, that's great. Like, I want that to work, partially because I could see myself maybe at some point doing that. But to be clear, they don't let me spend money around here. And then you tell me, yeah, I know, but you know the people who do, and you can introduce me, and so if you can do that, I would appreciate it. And then when those people ghost you, you go back to an engineer, and you're like, hey, how's everything? And they ask, oh, so how's the conversation with John going? Eh, you know, he seems busy, but if you could just ping him internally, that would be great. And then you do this over and over and over and over and over again, and is it great? No. Does it work? Yeah. Yeah. Like, every startup in the world just goes like this. It's however, the closings that did work did not take forever, did not take a year. They either closed in a month or two, or I am still trying to close them. Right now, I am thinking about one person in particular, who's a friend, and who I'm still chasing. He got, anyway, the point is. Point is, the ones where it will happen soon, otherwise. What I'm offering companies has refined a bit. Most companies want the whole thing. I started with like tiers, and like you can get the advisory part, and joining, I will join your Slack, and nobody bought the lower ones. Which, hey, okay. Great, more money. At the same time, I feel like I'm leaving something on the table by not knowing how to sell the lower tiers, but whatever, fine. Maybe the answer is that the thing that does sell is that advisor part I was telling you about earlier. That when you compare it to, look, you could hire an engineer and have them become an expert in this and have them get involved with the project so that you can go and ask them for support when you need to, or I cost a fraction of that. Because I have multiple clients, right? Also, there's not as much risk that I will just move on, quit, and you'll have to retrain from scratch. I come pre-trained in the box. so that's the part that really sells. And finally, the ongoing, I was a little worried, am I overcommitting? I started slow because I didn't want to sell time I didn't have. Turns out, my main problem is that some clients don't use enough of my time. So I'm worried that in a year, they'll be like, what do you do for us again? Which is not a great conversation to have. So I try to keep them engaged and remind them that, hey, you can ask me questions. When I remind them, then they come back with questions, and then I answer them, and then they're happy, and that's great. But sometimes you have to remind them. On that, something useful I do is that every time there's a Go release, I'll send a PDF being like, hey, this release happened. You should probably patch. Here's my opinion on what you should patch. A lot of this is sending PDFs. If you are hoping for, you know, the new platform where you register and you get microtransactions directly to your wallet or something, no, I'm here to suggest getting very good at Microsoft Word. It doesn't have to be Microsoft Word. But yeah. And finally, it's a multi-stakeholder job. What does that mean? Sometimes your client will be like, oh, it would be very nice if there was support for Foo and Cooks and Blacks and all of that in the standard library. And I'm like, no, absolutely not. And, you know, that's a little fraught because, and for that, it's important to spread